Blog Talk Radio.
Tournament. I was talking to one of the shows, and I have a friend of mine who's up in the
Rhode Island area. She and I, we were like a MySpace friends, and then we're Facebook friends now, and he has a couple fighters in his tournament. I'm looking at his page right now. His name's Brian Gracia. He's got a fighters, John the Man Smith, and Mike Rex's wrap-up. So I don't know if which one of you knows them or not, or if he knows Brian or not. But Brian's a good guy. I mean, he tends to, big into the sport of boxing. And we just been friends, like I said, when I put together that MySpace for my Fighters Unlimited page, sharing articles with people. And he was always like, when there's a big fight coming up, say like Mayweather Marquez, or Pacquiao Cotto, or any big fight like that, he and I always get together and share emails, because we always try to say like what we think is going to happen, and he always says he always enjoys like reading a lot of my stuff. He sent me an email today, because I guess he's counting some pro fighters, too. And there's a fighter out of the Philadelphia area that he wanted to see if I had any scouting reports on, and that's a fighter that I don't have a very, very favorable impression of, and I've only seen the guy fight once or twice. I didn't like his fighting style, and most importantly, I didn't like the way the guy conducted himself in the ring. He was very dirty, and then when the fans were booing him after he got an unjust decision, he started pointing to his dick area, telling people to, suck his dick and stuff like that. I'm like, that's not the way to win a crowd over if you put on a piece of shit performance.
It's Derek Love stuff.
What?
Derek Love stuff. Okay, now, defunct Douglas.
Yeah, right. And so when this guy Brian asked me for a scouting report, I said, there's everything I know on the guy, and if you need more, email me and I will tell you what to do against him, how he fights, his rule breaking tactics, and how to counter him.
I'm definitely going to be scouting the landscape at 175 because this week I finally got under a buck 50. And I'm thinking maybe, since I decided to kind of rearrange my going pro schedule, and I'm definitely not going to be able to go pro until next year on my timetable. Just come back from this rib injury, and I'm probably going to be sparring for the first time again next week if everything goes well. So keep my fingers crossed. But I'm definitely going to be scouting the competition here because I might decide to put in a few more amateur fights than I planned before I go pro, just for the heck of it. And maybe I'll be in this tournament next year if they allow people that are...
That's not a bad thing either. I was telling Brian today when I scout him that you're now the biggest Rock Smart Shannon nut out there.
Yeah, it's funny. I got this stack of DVDs I'm supposed to be putting into one for the pre-show festivities tomorrow. So that's what I have to do, pull an all-nighter and get that done. That is picking me up at noon tomorrow to go to this tournament. So this week has been great. It's like probably the busiest week I've ever had to endure for fighting this festival.
In the boxing world, when you're helping out, you can do little things. I was when I went to my rep interview the other week, and I just ended up starting my job hopefully sooner or later. I was telling this guy, and I'm like, when you're in boxing and stuff like that, any little things you can do to make a childhood of impression, whether that's for the fighters, whether that's with, the fans, anything. Anything you can do to make that experience more enjoyable for others can only help the spirit in the long run.
One of the things we've always done at Fighters Unlimited is trying to recognize the people that aren't getting the interviews. And of course, the amateurs probably get the least attention out of anybody. Yes, he just scored 2 runs. Hallelujah.
I want right now to keep the crap out of each other. It might be very
well, I think even though it didn't work out too well for the Cardinals when the Red Sox went against them, I believe everybody enjoyed the fact that it was an all-red World Series thing. I like the idea of having another one of those with the Angels and the Phillies.
I was just thinking that when you said that. Who is all back to the main podcast? folks are not going to keep telling you. I mean, the kids can't help that.
Right.
But I try to tell people, with this big kid to keep fighting now, we got the next one I'm going to bring on is Turbo Attacking, which is going to be in 3 weeks or so. I'm going to write the article for that, and I'm going to give a unbiased opinion on what I think is going to happen. But when I send that article out, and hopefully I can get one more person to purchase that fight, because maybe they want to see me make a fool out of myself and my prediction be wrong. Or maybe they think what I say is going to happen, they think it's going to be exciting and they'll want to watch it. I have fights. When I go to a fight card, a local card, down in Philadelphia or so, and one time I was down there for a Rogers Chicago fight, like 2 years ago, and the father, they brought his son and his son's friend, both boys are about 10 or 11 years old, to the first fight, they were sitting ringside. And when the fight was over and Rogers came over and she saw this kid, and he just kind of said hi to him, these kids were so impressed, and then I talked to him and I gave the father my cards and they could read the article afterwards. And these kids, you know, the guy actually said, I just wanted to thank you because my son and his friend had so much fun at that fight card, they want to go back. Now, if I just made two fans because I was nice to people and I got a folder to talk to them, and these kids are eventually going to grow up, they're going to watch more fights, they're going to support the sport of boxing, then I'd be good for all of us.
Well, speaking of the sport of boxing, we just had Showtime trying to put it front and center this past weekend with the Super 6 boxing tournament. And I did watch some of the fights, all of the fights, but I didn't
I watched the first fight, the Abraham Taylor fight, and I didn't get to see the Frogs Terrell fight, but I did read some reports about it, and I talked to my father who watched it. Honestly, I know Jermaine Taylor is contracted in the Super 6 tournament in the next fight. Originally, I thought they were going to be like, it was going to be a point system where, like, there's three fights, and the top 2 point getters, which would obviously be Abraham because of the knockout, and then whoever else would play the finals, and somebody would just get squeezed out. But from what I'm reading now, it's in a round robin where, like, now in the next round, no matter what happens with the Andre Ward and Miguel Kessler fight, Taylor is going to fight Ward. I'm like, no, all these guys didn't have to fight each other. I didn't know it was going to be like that. But the thing is, after Taylor got knocked out like that, it might be time for him to say, you know what, let me get out of this tournament. I made some money. How about you honestly worry about the man's health?
Right, but you got to consider the fact that he didn't look that bad up until that point, you know? And boxing is boxing. Everybody knows when they get into it, you know, there's risks that you get hurt, you know, you're going to be in the hospital maybe after a fight. And I don't understand why so many people, especially so many people who have never boxed before, are calling for this guy to retire. I mean, it's one thing, like you said, to just pull out of the tournament and, you know, reinvent yourself. But there's a lot of these, you know, sit on their fat asses reporters out there putting these columns out saying that, you know, Taylor should just pack it up and back it in and quit. And I don't know about that because he put on a hell of a performance up to the point where he got knocked out.
I look at it this way. Now, I've never been a big Jermaine Taylor fan, and I thought he lost that first fight to Bernard Hopkins, and I thought that fight ruined him because it was the first time that he really got beat up in a fight. He got hurt, he got staggered, and he really ripped his confidence. And I thought the second fight with Hopkins was a draw. But he got knocked out pretty brutally by Zoe Pavlik. Then the fight against Carl Frotch was winning. But Taylor does not have a killer instinct. He's a guy, he's a nice guy, he's a great athlete. But there's sometimes, like, when he had Frotch down when they fought back in April, in the third or fourth round, he had him down. And I really thought that fight was done. And what did he do? He kind of just pulled off the gas pedal and Frotch came back and kind of pretty much put a beating on Taylor in the 12th round and stopped him. Granted, Taylor goes the distance, he wins that fight. The fight the other night, there were some times in there that I thought he could have really opened up on Abraham. He didn't do it. And the thing is, when he got knocked out, that was a pretty vicious knockout. I mean, he's in the canvas for a few minutes. There's got to be a point where this guy, I mean, you figure five of his last fights has been knocked out three times. Take it pleasure, but you don't want to see him have lingering effects and lingering injuries.
Okay.
I'm not a doctor. I'm going to come out there with that. I'm not a doctor. I'm not qualified to say anything like that, but just get his mentality a little bit. And yes, I think with Dr. Cox, my college boxing coach, I remember one time when I was sparring, and I got dinged in a sparring session. I got knocked on my ass. And I was okay, so I jumped up, and I wanted to spar again. And she said, no, I don't want you to do that. I'm like, the next day, I'm like, well, I'm going to check back when I spar again. He goes, well, he didn't really get shot yesterday. I was a freshman. I was 18. And the guy that got it was a 22-year-old, former All-American. He was pretty good. He caught me with a pretty upset hook. And, I was only down for a count of like 3 or 4, and it was a very decent sparring session. But Dr. Chan's like, I don't want you to develop what we call a soft head. And she goes, and that's not a literal term where your head is soft. But she goes, that's where it's like, you're not seeing the punches, and you're not reacting to them as well. And she goes, that's how precious and lingering injuries happen.
Don't forget, the knockout came in the 12th round. I mean, you don't have a soft head when you get knocked out in the 12th round by what I think was a lucky punch. I didn't score the fight, and I didn't watch the whole thing, but watching the end of that fight looked like Jermaine was in control, and he was just trying to cruise into the 12th round. Abraham got him with a perfect straight right, split the uprights, and hit him right on the nose down to the chin, like a downward stroke. It just devastated the chin area. I turned down the volume because it was a German station or something, or wherever the fight was, and it was on the radio that I had in the background. It was a brown sugar hookup. It tastes so good, but he hit him with this right hand. It was kind of funny. White guy fighting a black guy, that comes on. But he hit him with a nice right hand. I think it was round 8 or something. And you could tell that Jermaine was stunned there, but he never looked like he was in trouble, even up until that point where he got knocked out. It was just one punch out of nowhere, really. I mean, whether it was luck or not, you get to be, but still, it was one punch. And if that punch hadn't landed at that moment, Jermaine might have won that fight. And here you got people calling for him to retire and not mentioning the fact that it was just one punch, It was his 12th round. It was desperation time, But it's not, I don't think it's enough to call for the guy to retire, especially for these guys.
I'm not calling for the guy because he lost that fight. And it's the progression of life that he lost and the manner that he lost. You can say, damn, it's the 12th round, you can't lost the 12th round of frauds. And it was the 7th round of Pavlik. And the whole time she went to the freaking the guy who lost 4 out of the last 5 fights. And, or 4 out of the last 6, I don't know if he had 2 fights in between the second Pavlik and the frauds fight, but it doesn't matter. I know he had a really good season there. It's got 4 out of the last 5 or 4 out of the last 6 fights.
These are top class guys that he's fighting. If this was happening, you'd get bumps. I'd be on your side and stay in the same
place. I'm going to keep this. Okay. And a good friend of ours, Emerson, right? He represents Melchior Taylor. Melchior Taylor was on top of the world back in 1990. And he was fighting that fight with Luis Cesar Chavez, the first fight. And he was winning. But he was getting a lot of punishment. And whether the fight should have been stopped or not, we're not going to get in that debate. But the fact of the matter is, Taylor got dropped in that 12th round, and he was stunned. Now, if the fight was maybe another minute to go in that round, would he survive and still let it go on? That's debatable. But Taylor was, he definitely was hurt there. He came back, he won a few fights, he stepped up to fight terrible Terry Norris. Norris dropped him like 2 or 3 times, knocked him out in 4 rounds. Then Taylor came back in the next fight, he was still welterweight champion, when he fought a guy named Crisanto Espada. It was a Halloween night in 1992 over in England, somewhere like that. And Espada knocked him out in 8 rounds. Put him down like 2 times. Now you can see where Taylor is starting to talk in his interviews, and instead of being crisp and talking, he's starting to slur some words a little bit, and he's starting to talk a little bit slower, and you can tell like this guy's starting to have some problems. And he came back about 12 months after that, and he's able to get a rematch with Chavez. And he beat Chavez. But then late in the fight, he took a couple shots, went down again, they stopped the fight. Milton Taylor now has pretty severe brain damage because of the time that he was concussed in a short duration of time. He was competitive pretty much in a lot of those fights, and in the fight in between, he was still winning. But the fact of the matter is, he was taking a lot of punishment. He was getting beaten to the point where his fight had to be stopped. Whether it was the fourth round of the Taylor fight, the 12th round of the first Chavez fight, or the 8th round of both the Espada and the second Chavez fight, fact of the matter is, he was getting his brain concussed to the point where they were stopping fights. And that is why he now has a severely slurred speech, loss of memory, and other symptoms of destroyed brain damage.
So why was Governor Sindor trying to get us interviews with him? Frog all the way, and then I saw stories that said Terrell got robbed. So So I start watching like the first six rounds I watched, and I'm like, they were really pawing at each other, and it seemed like when somebody connected, it was like almost accidental, or you know, it's just like a spur of the moment thing. It's just like we're going in spurts against each other. And Darrell was trying to switch it up, and he was talking to Frotch. And, you know, Frotch has a very weird style. He's not very European in the makeup of his style. You know, he comes at you with only one hand really near his chin. And, you know, from time to time he'll come up with both hands. But even though he leaves, like, a lot of space where it looks like you can hit him, as soon as you do strike, he's a very defensive fighter, so he waits. And he'll land a punch on you if you throw that first punch usually. So that's why they call him the Cobra, I think, because he just, you know, he just dances around and then strikes. And he was able to just plod around the ring. So would you say that, you know, people said that he was the aggressor? I don't agree with that. I just agree that Darrell let him set the pace. I don't know if he was the aggressor, but he was
the aggressor. I mean, most of the time, I'd be coming forward, like, waiting bomb with Mike Tyson. So I meant he was the guy that he, like, set the pace. If there was no watch in that fight, it would have been less contact than there was.
And Darrell, you know, he was the best hope for the Americans, unfortunately. And talked so much trash before the whole thing that it just made us all look bad as boxing.
You think my confident worst chance is over Kessler?
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm saying for this round, you know.
Well, that's the next fight in the tournament. Ward versus Kessler. Roger Wood from California is the next wrestler from Denmark, wherever he is. Oh, by the way, the best observation from the Showtime fight the other night was from my very own mother. When she saw Mattel Kessler sitting in the audience next to Nikolai Valiyev, she was, oh my god! You see Valiyev? Oh my god, she said this!
Richie on the phone here. See if we can talk a little bit about this big event coming up this Friday. Tomorrow. Busy day. Later on we'll get to some of the other upcoming stuff. Of course we're going to have UFC 104 coming up this weekend. We're going to talk about that.
Sure. I'm talking to Richie the other day. And Steve Cunningham is getting his title shot, but not against Adamack. Adamack vacated the title. And Rio and the Cunningham camp, they're not too happy about that. But, they won the rematch for Adamack. He's vacating the title now. And they're going to be fighting one of us fanboys, Matt Steve Godfrey.
Okay.
Because they tried to get a title, and his location hasn't been set yet. Well, once it is, I'll come on the show. I'll tell my Marciano story again tonight.
Call him earlier and remind him like 2 hours ago, so guys, well, I told him between 8:30 and 9, maybe he's hoping that we'll do it there.
Let's just go over, I guess, our previews and stuff, and you guys just want to board with it, you got to get through, and, you know, probably back like 20 or so minutes.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to talk about the Boondock Saints. I totally forgot about that. This past Monday, as you may or may not know, I was able to interview the Saints, the two brothers, at least the actors who play the two brothers in the movie Boondock Saints, and the sequel All Saints Day, which I was able to see in a special screening. Only the people that were interviewing these guys got to see the screening. So that was kind of flattering. And then it was pretty cool because I get in there, and it's in this little Irish pub, like a restaurant there in Boston, right across from the big custom clock tower that you see in all the movies. It's supposed to represent Boston. It's always in Boston Legal, too, if you ever watch that show. But anyway, I'm in the bar there, and they tell us, oh, they're filming upstairs, so we're going to wait down there. Getting ready to sit me down at the table with the pool reporters. You know, it's like six or seven of them interviewing all of the cast and the director. And I'm on the end of all these reporters, and then one of the ladies stops me and she goes, "Wait, you're Rich? Oh no, you're gonna do a one-on-one." You know, with this group. So, I kind of knew that already, but it was kind of cool getting selected out from all the reporters. Like, no, you're special. You're over here. So I get to watch the pool interview and do my own later with just a couple of the actors because they end up being so behind schedule. I guess Fox News around here must be very popular because I know it's really like a kind of different format. I watch it sometimes when I get up early, but you know the other news stations are pretty basic. And, you know, they just do the regular news, but Fox is a little bit more expressive. They have their opinionated stuff and debates and all kinds of little things. So they had the Saints on early in the morning. You know, the whole cast of the new movie and everything like that. And there was a lot of buzz going around about that. I mean, I heard about it before I left the house and I wasn't even watching myself. Somebody told me about it that they were on. And, so that I guess threw them behind schedule for the whole day. By the time I got there, they were like, I think about an hour behind. And one reporter actually had to leave for another event because it kind of ran into her other schedule. Anyway, made a long story short, I got to interview the brothers, the actors who play the brothers, and we just put a story up on the website not too long ago, last night, about the whole thing with videos. The videos didn't come out too great, but the audio is there, so you can really hear. Talk about the experience. The movie is really about like a bunch of vigilantes. Two brothers end up being like holy vigilantes who just go all over Boston taking out these mobsters and drug dealers. The first movie is really just a masterpiece. I mean, it's one of those movies that once you see, you just be like, "Well, what happened? How come I missed this?" You know, because it didn't go at the theaters, and I had that impression when I first watched it. I said, "Well, this is a great movie. You know, there's really no waste of time in it. It's very well put together. It's real tight. Every time you see like something happening and wonder, you know, why are they showing this? You know, you get an answer like a minute later. You know, something happens. There's so many little tweaks that they do differently that no other Hollywood movie does. Like they'll always show the murder scene of the day after, you know, the crime scene before they show how it happened. You know, so you know they'll actually go back in time in the movie." And they do it, you know, for every big murder scene. And it's very interesting the way they do it because they have a profile and, you know, the FBI guy comes in and, you know, he'll analyze it and then you see it play out exactly almost how he said it. With very little differences. And Willem Dafoe's in the first one. I mean, a really interesting cast. And even though I can't really say anything about the new one until the actual release date on October 30th, I can tell you that almost everybody is back for the second one. And I mean, like, some of the extra people, you know, that weren't big-time actors, all of them are back. So it's pretty interesting. October 30th, so it's actually going to be in theaters this time. And hopefully they'll use my quote. I gave them a pretty good quote about the movie after sitting down with them. And one of the guys that plays Connor McManus, the character he plays, is actually a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. So he's been following UFC and MMA for a long time. I didn't find that out until after they had selected me to do this for God knows why. It's kind of funny. When I sit down with, in front of these guys, they're like, Fighting's Unlimited. Like, they're all puzzled, like, what the hell are you doing here? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing here either. but then we get into it, you know, and I've had, you know, a little bit of experience interviewing some people that did some acts up at Pettigrew Musical Arts Center in New Hampshire when I worked in front of the newspaper. Alice Cooper, Greg Allman from the Allman Brothers, and George Thorogood. You know, those dirt rate acts that are still hanging on. They've been there forever, but they're still legends and all that. So that was kind of cool, and that kind of gave me that experience of dealing with celebrity and not letting it kind of intimidate me. A lot of people, they get nervous around celebrities, but the way this was set up, you know, the pool reporters were only separated by tables. You know, they were sitting face to face with the whole cast, you know. So I don't know what kind of papers they were from, but, you know, if you're in a pool situation like that, it's probably the small independent papers. So that's the kind of movie it is, you know. The guy started by skipping the theaters with the first one, so he's a very independent minded guy, the guy who directed it and wrote it. He obviously has some kind of connection to Boston, but I didn't get to interview him. And I thought it was really funny when I asked the two guys that played the brothers from Boston. They have no connections in reality to Boston. And that's that was kind of crazy to me. Because I was like, well, it seemed like when you play the act, when you play, do the act and you play the characters, it seems like, you know, you definitely have some Boston in you somewhere. So that surprised me. But, yeah, we'll see what happens there, and I asked them about all their future stuff going on, and the one thing that kind of stood out, and that sounds pretty interesting, is the guy that plays Murphy McManus is going to be in a movie about the Abraham Lincoln assassination and the trial based on that, so that I thought was going to be interesting. That's his next project. But what was really funny is, I guess I kept him from having a cigarette. Because he was trying to...
That's a stupid thing for me.
Huh? Yeah, I did a good thing for him. Some people, he was so frantic to have a cigarette because he'd been jamming all day. Obviously, the piece was so frenzied. These guys are just in Boston for one day to do all this. They were nonstop the whole time I was up there. They were going like madmen, one interview to another. So when I was getting lined up to sit down with them, a couple of them were going to in front of the cameras for another interview, and they thought they were getting the time off, these two. So he goes and runs for a cigarette, and the girl that set me up with the whole thing, she stops him, and she's like, "No, you're going to get questioned by this guy." But he has to come back, and then I start off the interview by asking the other guy with the black belt and Brazilian jiu-jitsu some questions about MMA and fighting. So you can see him in the video. He doesn't know he's being taped. And he sees me looking down at my notes, and he's yelling at the other. You're not yelling, but motioning. Like, with his fist, like, it's all about fighting, you know, cut, making the cut sound. Like, get me out of here. I got to have my smoke. So I thought that was hilarious. And you can see it on the video. He's like, you know, doing the motions, and then I start asking him questions, and he gets into it. But that was the only drama. Everything else was cool. They asked me my opinion of the movie at the end of it. I told them I seemed like they really appreciated my remarks, my perspective. They're very down-to-earth guys, it seems like. Actually, the most interesting thing I think that came out of the whole interview was Norman Reedus, the guy who plays Murphy McManus, told me that he never watched his TV. He hasn't watched his TV at all. Hasn't even turned one on in about 11 years. Can you imagine that? Like, you know, being a Hollywood actor, you don't even watch TV. And I asked him, our question was, you know, so have you ever done any TV acting at all? And he says, no, actually, not at all. So, an interesting guy, quite the background. He was also in Pandora, although I didn't ask him what it was like to work with Kung Lee. Forgot about that. Kung Lee didn't really have any English parts in the movie, so that wasn't that interesting. But anyway, getting back to this big tournament this weekend, actually tomorrow, Friday, we have the Rocky Marsh tournament. It's supposed to be this fight night, movie night. Some Rocky Marciano clips beforehand. I'm not sure how they're going to work out the scheduling here, but it looks like it's going forward. So we'll get a blog out about that. And if you go to Rocky49Wins.com, you can also check out the blog there for more details. It's got a tough mass at the, geez, I'm going to have to look that up. But it's in some kind of bar, a Roseland bar, I want to say. And, tough mass. There's going to be 28 fights. Kids actually get belts. And Rich Capiello's son is actually fighting. So, third generation of the Marciano blood there. It's going to be in action. The Roseland Ballroom, yeah. It's up on Broadway and Taunton, Mass. Let's try Richie again. Pick up the phone.
Dorchester, right around the corner from where I grew up, so
That'd be interesting if they have the same location next year. I'd love to have to get involved and have a fight there. That'd be pretty cool. I bet if we grew up right around the corner. Like, I don't even see it walk. On the other side of the train tracks from where the thing is. But anyway, Brendan Capiello, Richie's son, is going to be fighting Jose Rivera's son. You know, Jose Rivera, the guy from Worcester here, who was a very formidable welterweight fighter. You might have heard his name before.
Yeah. forgot the world of mixed martial arts. And this is the Kurt Angle, which you're talking about. He's still a WWE. I'm going back to 2004, 2005. The dude was doing one of the competitions where the guys were trying to win a contract with World Wrestling Entertainment. And it was, they did it for like 2 years till they took it off. And the one guy who was trying to win it was a former mixed martial artist, Daniel Cedar. I don't really know much about him, but then they were doing like a competition, and part of it was like they were trying to do like an amateur wrestling competition, which were, of course, is Kurt Angle's full thing. And so, because him and his Daniel Peter are going down, and they wrestled, and he was doing an arm bar. And when that happened, they kind of was about to time out, and they actually, and it was happening. And the referee must have noticed that he was in his back, and he was kind of doing real fast.
Speed chase, but still, they really were angry at that.
find any of them. But Josh Neer is 25-8-1. He's going to be fighting Gleason Tebow, who's 29-6 in the 155-pound class. So it's going to be an interesting fight. Josh is nicknamed the Dentist. I've seen him fight in person down in Iowa. I went down there with our original sponsors and cage fighting there. Then we have Spencer Fisher, a guy I saw live fighting at the Prudential Center in New Jersey. Lost to Frankie Edgar in that fight, if I remember correctly. It's UFC 77. I forget. Anyway. Spencer Fisher is 24-4-0. And he's fighting another guy who's all ups and downs completely. He's 35-10, Joe Stevenson. Joe Danny Stevenson. So Spencer Fisher is going to have his work cut out for him. Joe's been in some of the battles over the years. Both guys have been in some really good fights. Then we have Anthony Johnson versus Yoshiyuki Yoshida. Anthony Rumble Johnson is 7-2 at 170 pounds. And Yoshida is 11-3. Ryan Bader, undefeated at 10-0 at 205 pounds. He's going to be fighting Eric Schaefer, 13-3-2. Also, Anthony Hardock, 8-5-0 versus Pat Barry, 4-1 at 245, all heavyweight against. Yushin Okami versus Chael Sonnen at 185. Both guys have 24 wins. That's pretty hard to do. Matchup. Okami has four losses to Sonnen's 10, and Sonnen has one draw as well. Then we have another Boston area guy coming back to the UFC, Jorge Rivera. We just talked about Jose Rivera. Now we're going to talk about Jorge Rivera. 16-7. And he was on one of the original Ultimate Fighter episodes, if I remember correctly. That well, but he's fighting Rob Timmons, another guy who's been around forever. He is 22-4. He's 185 pounds, so I guess I'll be cheering for Jorge to make an impact there. Kyle Kingsbury versus Razak Al-Hassan, 7-1 versus 7-2 there. Kingsbury 7-2, so Hassan is 7-1. And then finally, Stefan Struve versus Chase Gormley. Struve is 21-3, and Gormley is 6-0. That's a heavyweight fight. So there should be some interesting fights there, and probably be talking about it next week. I don't really have any predictions, although I would say I've got to go with the undefeated guy in Machida. And any surprise people, but I think Machida's going to knock him out with a kick or something.
We'll see.
Let's try Richie one last time here.
Rich Capiello.
The torture message after the tone. Depending on your married age, press 5. When you are finished recording, hang up.
Wow, man. He's
tough guy to get a hold of. I'm going to deal with Dr. Cox on the LSU Home Show. Like the night before, he would just show. Coach Cooper would call a bear with a sore ass.
Capital O, capital F, lowercase I. I started tomorrow, he goes.
How do you feel about that?
I love it. I want more of it. I love it. I want more of it. That's what he used to say in the military when we didn't really want to say it because we didn't mean it.
Right, exactly.
Nice. Good timing. You just said that. I turned my gaze to the TV and somebody got a double.
Mathis, Johnny Mathis. I don't know if
it's Angels have been through so much devastating, like, you know, sweeps by the Red Sox over the years that they actually have, like, sympathy hope for them, in addition to hating the Yankees. I really want to see them.
No, it's cool. This is all anti-Yankees. If it was the Angels right now, say they're playing with the Kansas Royals or, back in the day before they had, like, all the federal lines in the cheese,
Kovacs,
13-0 with 9 knockouts versus Piula Gaspar, 7-4 with 1 draw and 3 knockouts. Card there over in Germany. And then over in Indonesia on Saturday, we have Roy Nicholas, 22-2 with 2 draws versus Vakarakarit Senahan, 15-1, 1 draw and 7 knockouts for the WBC International Super Featherweight title. We find on that card. And as we got on Saturday. Wow, this is one I never heard of. I mean, it's not even a good fight to talk about, but it's kind of funny the title is on the line. Over in Latvia, we have the vacant Latvia light heavyweight title on the card between Martins Kukuls, who's 5-26. I mean, he's going for a title. And, I guess not. This is fighting Andres Tolstys, who's 3-14. That's 1 draw. Nice card.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what, 5-26 and 3-14 for records? Yep. This one's got a total record of 5-14. Well, you gotta go down to Baja, Mexico for some real good matchmaking. And, featherweight, you see Cristobal Cruz on Saturday versus Ricardo Castillo for the IBF featherweight title. 39-11, 1 draw, 23 knockouts. Castillo is 38-7, 25 knockouts. Also in Mexico on Saturday at the World Trade Center in Veracruz, Mexico. Super flyweight Thomas Rojas, 31-11 with 1 draw, 22 knockouts. And Evans Bababa, 16-0 with 8 knockouts for the interim WBC super flyweight title. It's going to be super fly. And we got a fight over in Manila, Philippines, pretty interesting, for the WBC International Super Flyweight title. 10-2, Sylvester Lopez with 1 draw, 7 knockouts. He's going against Katsumi Makiyama, 13-5 with 1 draw and 4 knockouts. Then, as you spoke of earlier, Thomas Adamek will be fighting Andrew the Foul Pole Galata. And a heavyweight, and that's probably maybe why he's taking the belt. Maybe he's going heavyweight from now on.
Number one, Murat Hakkar. I went to the fight. And the fight was
fired and said, well, you know, you got paid for doing a whole lot of nothing tonight. Because here we get paid for doing a whole lot of nothing every night.
Yeah. Well, data bank is 38-1, 26 knockouts.
So that's the chat box with no team there.
Chad's one of my favorite fighters. Yeah, that chat. But I like very much. Anyway, Thomas is fighting Galata, who is 41-7, with one draw. Mostly, I think, all of his fights have been in heavyweight, as I know. 33 knockouts, pretty good. It's for the vacant IBF International Heavyweight title, so if Adam Mack wins, he gets the title already. First fight up in heavyweight. That's nice of the vacant IBF.
Watching that fight between Adamack and Cunningham last year, Adamack won that fight for two reasons. One, he had a little bit better of a chin, and he was able to throw punches when Cunningham dropped his hands. But other than that, he took a lot of punches. Now, Cunningham is a decent punching cruiserweight. He's not a knockout artist. He had, out of like 22 wins, he had like 11 knockouts. He's not a guy that's going to bomb you out of there. So he's a tough guy, he has a good chin, but now what's going to happen is instead of taking punches from a 200-pound Steve Cunningham, who's not, you know, the knockout puncher, we're taking right hands, because we see the time that he takes out of the way of right hand, he's a right hand, and a 250-pound Vladimir or recently punched him.
Well, yeah, I mean, Cunningham, like we said, he had kept his hands up.
And now he's being trained by Brad Hopkins' trainer on Nazeem Richardson. So I know there's been a lot of improvements working with him now. Because Nazeem Richardson is a very good defensive trainer. He's the guy that orchestrated Shane Moses' game plan to beat Martin Arena. He just came out with a little spring magazine, has an interview with Nazeem. Looking forward to reading that he got it a couple days ago.
I think it would be a good fight if I don't think he ever wants to fight Cunningham again. He probably never will, but I bet since Adamek is coming from light heavyweight, going up to heavyweight there, is he cruiserweight technically? No, Adamek. Right. So maybe he should fight David Haye after David Haye gets demolished by the big giant. I don't know, I'm just saying that.
Like, you can't get out of the rock. One of them cuts the old guy and gets a job done.
famous fighting team, but I discussed it one time, and I actually saw that he was ranked with some of the greatest heavyweights in one of the boxing games that I got for PlayStation or Xbox or whatever. I think it was Don King's game. I thought, Andrew Gallada? Why? But I guess, I don't know, some people liked him when he was focused together. He obviously put together a lot of wins, a lot of knockouts. 33 knockouts, that's one of the knockouts.
Your message.
All right, well, I guess that's it for him, huh?
Yeah.
on that list. Now, here's what I want to talk to you about.
We used to, way back in the day, about 6 months ago, we did a live show.
Right.
Now we record. What is your schedule like next week? If what I was wanting to see was if we could possibly record on either sometime during the day or a night other than Thursday. Because I have World Series games on Wednesday and Thursday evening, and I know I will be distracted.
Yeah, we can definitely do it on that. That's no problem at
all. I'll email you. That way we can discuss it.
Yeah, this week has been slammed because I had the Monday thing and all that bullshit. That's all gone. Now I have to do this whole tournament tomorrow. I'm probably going to take a lot of video and do a lot of writing for that. So Monday probably won't be good, but the other day next week will be fine.
Okay, well, Tuesday is good for me, or if you want me to do it on Wednesday or Thursday, I'm available during the day.
Okay.
When we were starting to just shove off, that's when I got in touch about this. I was supposed to start my new job next week. And obviously, I want to make a good impression. So, for me, the job a few weeks ago, and they said, well, there might be a situation, a position that we offered. If you want to offer you a different position, which is going to be more modest. I said, well, absolutely. And I came in, I took the job back to the physical, I bought some flying colors. They said, when do you want to start? And I was like, well, I don't want to push it back too long. I said, I know, I'm really going to be busy next week because, I host a Halloween party, and the World Series is going to start. I don't know if the Phillies is going to be in it, but, that possibility could cross my mind. And I said, let me say the 26th, just to make a good impression that I want to get started. And I said, we agreed on the 26th. And then I get a call on Monday, I'm about to go to the store. I'm like, and it wasn't the boss, it was one of the tech supervisors that was going to train me. So then we might have a situation coming up with the division. I said, yeah. We'll see if you're going to do a little part-time job. I'm like, are you kidding me? He says, yeah, and it's going to be a little bit less money per hour, too. And I'm like, wait a minute. So I'm basically going from, I was going to train at around 14 an hour and then move up to 19 after a few months, which would be making me around 35 to 38,000 a year. Not great, but not bad. So I said, we're going to see if you're going to take straight 15 for training, but then off to the group. Once you become, a certified tech. And I'm like, you're looking at 20 hours a week. I'm making more than that on my phone. I said, you gotta be kidding me. I said, I'm looking at about 6,000. I said, there's no way this is gonna work. And
Studios pays you $15 an article. You get 10 articles a week. And that's, you don't even have to have a boss.
Yeah, right. But I said, let me get back to the general manager. And I got back to him, I said, that's a key. I said, I'll thought about it. I said, look at the calculations. I said, if you say $300 a week, that's only like $50,000 a year. I said, that's impossible. Breaking would be able to live off of. I said, if there's stuff that I was expecting close to 40. I said, what makes you waste me so much time to do this? And I was real diplomatic. I said, what makes you so much time? I said, why would you want to bring me in for training and spend money for me working and training? Because basically, I'm telling you right now, if you give me a part-time job, I'm looking somewhere else, and I get a full-time offer out of the week. I said, that's not a good thing. You lose money doing that. And I said, you also spent a lot of money having to take a drug test and a physical. I said, I spent a lot of effort. Once you offer me a job, I stopped doing our interviews. I said, we got to make this work out. You get back to me, the general manager's real nice for me, a little bit wishy-washy, like where you can kind of bully him real quick. He's like, how do you agree with you 100%? And I'm like, damn, I agree with you, I'm saying the rest. I said, hey, I'm doing well with you. I said, I'll delay my start date for an additional 2 weeks. So I've got a little bit of time to set up the routes a little bit better. I said, I'll do that for you. I'm going to think to myself, hey, I got Halloween week off now, you can drop the shit. And I can be hanging out for the World Series, sleeping there after the games. And if I win, I can be able to play. I don't have to take a day off.
There you go.
I'm going to Watch the guy on, watch out on our
just watch out for those cops with their beanbag guns.
So right.
The celebration could be deadly as we know up here.
Thank you.
always safe to root against the Yankees. Red Sox Nation, since they won the World Series, and even before they won the World Series, really was Red Sox Nation. There was a time where it just happened, like maybe when the new ownership group took ownership, but it never used to be when I was growing up that you could see the Red Sox go to another stadium and there would be like 90% Red Sox fans at that stadium. Well, do we have any other comments, fortunately, instead of Dr. Melvin, before I sign off? I have a few more minutes left
anyway. The only thing I'm sending you to the show right now, Bernard Hopkins, ripping Iron Merchant and the new asshole.
Well, I do have one bit of news about the world's most popular mixed martial arts ref, Big John McCarthy. There's some news about him. He was forced to walk away from his MMA reffing gig when he chose to collect a check from several promotions and media outlets. Now he wants back in, and a lot of states are saying there's no room for him. And in his own state of California, he was licensed there, but he wasn't assigned to UFC 104 in Los Angeles. And this one blog I'm reading here has a request to start another Twitter campaign to bring him back. It was rumored that he was coming back, but I guess not for some reason. I guess he rubbed some athletic commissioners the wrong way when he said that the state MMA judging initiated was horrible. So maybe it's political. And even worse, he won't get a Topps UFC trading card. They're kind of giving him a big snub. Because he's been outspoken about bad refing. But our friends at Round 5 have an SP region. So I'm sure he's making money. And he has his own studio and everything too. Did I mention in any previous shows that I tell you that Bob Dylan owns a boxing gym? Did you know that?
Oh,
Bob Dylan. I heard that somewhere. Online, I think, but I was pretty shocked myself. I didn't even know this boxing thing. Is that all in South California? It's a boxing thing.
I mean, sometimes
you
can't see me.
Territory, so that counts. Dylan. I just did a search on Bob Dylan. Guess what? It's the Fight Club type channel. Quentin Tarantino marks Bob Dylan. And he says Bob Dylan wanted to play hard, and he nailed me with a really good punch. We were sparring together, and he got one in there when I wasn't paying attention. I think it was a right jab. And then I got down for a minute, and he just thumped it in. He's a good coach. Then I see this other article. The first rule to note at Bob Dylan's boxing club is don't talk about it. Membership is invitation only. There's no sign to announce the place, which sits in the basement of the 18th Street Coffee House in Santa Monica. Business permits for both establishments, as well as for one adjacent synagogue, are in the name of his manager, Jeff Rosen, who doesn't want to talk about it. I know nothing about that. Can't you find something more interesting to write about? The wild-haired baristas at the coffee house don't want to either. It's a secret. That's a secret, the next waitress says. Dylan's tied to the block. So he has a basement boxing club. Invitation only. So I'm hoping that he's in town, too. That's great. So there you have it, straight from the internet. Speaking of weird stories, what do you think about this whole balloon boy bullshit? See my story on that?
Yeah. The people find it
fight night showing before the fights tomorrow night, so going to be blogging as well. And I'm going to definitely put up on the blog the two installments that have been available at the Video Vault at through MMA TV that I use all the time to get all the secret videos. We have Tyson on Oprah and Tyson on Holyfield. Tyson and Holyfield on Oprah. The full video is available. I'm going to be putting those on the blog tonight in case you missed them. So adios, folks, and have a good Thursday night. What's left of it?
All right.